Good afternoon. Welcome to the Wolf Whistle. I'm joined this week by our 10th speaker, Simon Osborne. Midfielder, played for the club in the 90s, signed in December 1995 for the priceless sum of £1 million, 185 appearances, 12 goals, 6 years at the club. Simon, how are you?
Very well. I'll call you the right name, Jace.
This is our second run, actually, because Simon called me Jamie by accident.
You just look like a Jamie.
And I've known Simon for a number of years, but he chose to forget my name, so we had to rewind it, start all over again. So
adds to the flavour.
It certainly does, Ozzy. Well, I'm glad you remember me. I certainly remember you. So let's rewind the clock back. You're a London lad. You started your career at Crystal Palace?
Yeah, that's right. I was a Croydon born, bred. Palace was my local club. Literally was playing district football. The coach was involved with Palace and then took me along to there. Stayed there throughout and then signed YTS in, 88.
Yeah.
So signed there. Managed to get a pro contract, played there for a few years and then sort of flitted around and ended up in Wolves sort of 5 years later on, which is it's a strange one.
So, to obviously, I asked this to all the players. Normally, Wolves is the hometown club, but for you, to play for the club you supported as a boy was a huge honour, wasn't it?
Yeah, I didn't support them. I watched them because they were local. Tottenham was my team purely because of Glenn Hoddle. Purely Glenn Hoddle, it wasn't Tottenham or anything like that. I just loved him as a player.
Yeah.
So I watched Tottenham, but I'd go to some games at Palace purely because, again, I could walk to it.
Yeah.
So I was fortunate. Yes, it's your local club, you get involved in it, you know, you walk into the ground sometimes. So it's great. So there are a lot of people that you know are Palace fans.
Yeah.
So to play for it was brilliant for me at that particular time and then spent great times there. My apprenticeship through the, you know, coming straight out of school, 16-year-old, wet behind the ears, probably weighing about 10 stone.
Yeah.
So walking out of there when that, you know, we got promoted and that's when I left Palace. They sold me to Reading in 94, I think it was. I went to Reading.
And that was for £90,000, wasn't it?
Yeah. I basically, my contract had run out. They got promoted. Alan Smith was the manager at the time. I didn't play as much as I'd like to the year before. I felt it was time, you know, time for a change. Not stale, but just it was done. Thought it was time for me to move on, go and try and play somewhere, get a lot more games under my belt. All I wanted to do was play.
Yeah.
Mark McGee and Colin Lead seen me in a game towards the end of the season somewhere. I can't remember if it was a testimonial or something. Were trying to sign me. I went over to Reading, trained for a week, had a couple of chats, and then it was just basically for the clubs to agree the fee.
Yeah.
And then they signed me for the 90,000. I came. My debut for Reading was against...
Go on.
Wolves.
Really?
1-0, Steve Froggatt. Lucky so-and-so.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah, 25 years ago today...
Was it really?
No, 25 years ago today, we beat you 4-2 at Reading, when I was at Reading.
Okay.
And I scored against Wolves at Elm Park. So it's funny, isn't it, how did they sort of deal with that?
It does, because you, actually, it was a question I was going to come to, but I'll ask it now. You had a knack of scoring against your former clubs, for all your clubs, really.
Weird, wasn't it?
Doing a bit of research, but I asked the same question to Jody the other day. Did you celebrate when you scored against your former club?
Yeah, 100%. Never even thought anything of it. Obviously, at the time, you were at a club... scored against QPR for Wolves, celebrated it. Didn't go very well at QPR, so that was always going to be celebrated. I did. I didn't see the point of not. You know, you give your all for the club you're at that current time.
Yeah.
When you move on to the next club, whatever it is, be it Wolves, be it QPR, Gillingham, Walsall, if you score, it's a great feeling to score, you know, so why shouldn't you celebrate? I don't see why. Yes, you're respectful for the club you've played for, but that's gone, that's done, that's history.
Yeah.
You know, I was lucky that I did that, and like I said, that game, so it's only I noticed it because someone put it on Twitter.
Okay.
Just early on and said it was 25 years ago this day, and that was December. Yeah, so now...
You don't look old enough.
I know, and then literally the following year, December, I signed for Wolves. So I was at Reading, went to QPR, so 90 grand. Reading, we obviously finished second.
Yeah.
That season in Championship, that was the only year they was reducing the Premiership down, so only one went up automatically. And we were second, didn't go up, went into the playoffs and lost to our old favourites from Wolves, Bolton, 4-3.
Oh, yeah, we'll talk about your playoff record in a minute, Ozzy.
Do we have to?
Yeah, we have to, mate, we have
then,
to.
Yeah, so I did that and then went to QPR. Obviously, Ray Wilkins, I had known at Palace, to QPR.
That deal was £1.1 million, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
So you must have been obviously doing something right at Reading because that's big, you know, big money moves.
Yeah, it worked at Reading. Mark took me in. He gave me freedom to go and play. I had people alongside me that sort of complimented me at that time. It started off really well. Still scored a couple of goals. Team were playing really well. Got promoted. That little sort of buzz that you're coming up.
Yeah.
Everything was still going well. Played loads of games up to Christmas. New Year's Eve got a bit of a knee injury that kind of hindered me for the next couple of years on New Year's Eve. Came back and obviously still done well. Mark then went off to Leicester December. Mark McGee left with Courtney, took his team all the way over to Leicester. They then had a look at me, inquired about me in the summer. Didn't quite happen. Ray Wilkins come in, who I knew from Palace. So I decided to go back into the Premiership. So I'd come out to go back, which I thought was natural for me to do.
Of course.
Went back into the Premiership under Ray Wilkins. Thought, you know, sort of another idol of mine. Watched him growing up, playing for the team.
What a player Ray was.
Oh my God, what an absolute top player. Yeah. Top player, top professional, top. Honestly, the bloke is a legend. I know I fell out with him and it didn't quite work out football wise, but the bloke's a gent. Honestly, I could say no more about him, God rest his soul, that he is an absolute gent. Even when I coated him in the papers and we had one or two rounds. I may have been trying to force a move.
In all my research, I didn't come across that Aussie.
You won't come across that, but you know, this just didn't work out. It didn't happen. It happens at certain things. You know, you go to a job and it doesn't quite work out. This was just a football club, didn't fit for me at the time. But didn't get the game time I wanted. Probably played 15 games from the start of the season to Christmas. Didn't enjoy it.
What didn't you enjoy? You say didn't enjoy it.
I enjoyed the training. Training was fine. I always loved training. I just didn't enjoy that. I wasn't playing the position that I felt I wanted to play in. They were playing the midfield three. There was myself, Simon Barker, Ian Holloway at the time. Mark Hatley was there. Obviously, Ray was playing a little bit as well. He was manager, but trying to play. And I just felt that it was still harping onto what they'd done the season before because they'd had a great season.
Yes.
And I just felt whatever I did, I couldn't get in the team, you know. So I just...
So what's your best position if you could...
Central midfield.
Yeah. And so where was they playing you?
I was playing sort of left side of a three sometimes. And then, you know... It just didn't fit. It wasn't me. Didn't work out for whatever reason. And then come December, Mark obviously left Leicester. Went to Wolves and basically saw that I wasn't playing. Obviously knew me from Reading, tried to take me to Leicester. And then obviously the agents start talking and bits and pieces start going on. And eventually they talked, QPR agreed to let me go and go and talk to Wolves. Drove up, obviously came up, met the manager, had a look around the place, looked around the stadium. Basically no-brainer for me. There was a lot of players here at the time that just looked at the stadium, looked at the size of the club, looked at the potential, effectively, the players that were here, Steve Ball, Don Goodman, John DeWolf, Gordon Cowans, Paul Birch. You know, the list is endless of players that were here.
I mean, would you be concerned? I know you had complete faith in your own ability, but are you a bit concerned, you know, am I going to be getting into this team? Is there going to be tough competition for places? Because some of the names you mentioned there, Wolves had a good midfield.
I didn't. You know, I never even looked here like that. I just looked at... Mark McGee knew me. Obviously, they were going to show a bit of faith in me to pay money for me.
Yeah.
I didn't even... It didn't bother me at all who was here. All I knew is that if I came in here and I played to the ability I could, I'd like to back myself that going to the team.
Yeah.
And fortunately, I did that. And, you know, a couple of those guys were coming sort of more towards the end of their careers and they were going to be shipped on. It's the same thing. New manager comes in, sort of gets rid of a few. So, no, I didn't. I just thought, I looked at it, looked at the stadium. Biggest decision probably for me was moving away from London.
Yes.
That's the one deciding factor that comes
into it. Have you always lived there throughout your career, Simon?
In London.
Because I know you live there now, but did you, when you made the move to Wolves, did you move up to Wolverhampton?
No, I moved up. Yeah, it's too far, literally. When I went, I moved to Reading. And I bought a place over towards Reading, but that's an hour from where I live. So it was I'd stay there and I could shoot back. It was pretty easy. But when it came to this one, this was a sort of a big call. It was a big decision.
Yeah.
But footballing-wise, I moved up. I stayed in the Mount Hotel for 3 months while I found somewhere to live.
Where did you live in Wolverhampton?
Then I moved out to Treasel.
Oh, yeah.
I started out at Treasel. Then I moved from Treasel. I moved out to the back of Burnell Green, Patsall.
Yeah.
And then stayed there. And then that was me until I moved back down to London, basically. Loved it.
Mark McGee obviously signed you. I believe you was actually his first signing. And Mark, once again, he had a knack of signing players from his former clubs and players he worked with before. He obviously had a lot of faith in you. Now, I interviewed Andy Thompson recently. He had a, you know, fairly odd and, you know, a relationship with Mark that didn't work. What was your relationship like with Mark?
No, see, I always got on well with him. Obviously, if he signed you and he's had you from a previous player, you've got a kind of relationship. He knew what he was getting.
Yeah.
Obviously, I like training. I enjoy training. I've got a bit to say for myself at certain times, but you know, I like to have a laugh and a joke, but train hard. And I didn't have a problem with him. If it worked at the time, I think where some of the other guys, it didn't quite work. You had Mark and Colin, quite different characters.
Yeah.
Mark was a bit of a man manager, liked a little bit of that, where Colin was quite a bit more stern, a bit more, not boring is the wrong word, it just was more of a tactician, more of a thinker.
Yeah.
And towards the end of it, that, I think even that relationship soured a little bit, and I think that maybe affected some of Mark's judgment, because Tomo's Mr. Dependable, if you know what I mean. He is.
Exactly that. And he said, I think the relationship between Mark and Colin got a bit strained as well, yeah, like you said.
Yeah, I think that affected everything, you know. Like I said, Tomo would always play, but I don't feel that he ever felt wanted, if that made sense, Tomo.
Yes.
He'd probably say the same. I haven't listened to it all, but, you know, that's the feeling you get. He's not... Sometimes we all need a bit of love, don't we? We all need a cuddle.
And oh, yeah, exactly.
And say, well done, whatever happens. And Tomo, every single week, 7 out of 10, 7 out of 10.
He was a great player. So.
Yeah, great, but a great lad as well, you know. It wasn't just a player. We had some good players at the time, but he was also a great lad.
Yep.
He was also the first person that I had to go to interpret for Bully because I didn't have a clue
what
he was saying.
Do you know
when I first got up there, I didn't have a clue. My wife actually thought he was foreign when I first got... My wife now, she was my girlfriend at the time, actually thought he was foreign. She went, where's he from?
People still can't understand Steve Ball. We are going to get him on the podcast when we can put subtitles on.
Honestly, she looked, she went, where's he from? I went, he's from here, Tipton. She went, really? And I used to say, that's why I used to wind Bully up.
Yeah.
Because he'd say something to me. Well, I was, you know, I was... And I'd go, Tomo.
Hey, that actually really did sound like it, Aussie.
Tomo, what's your mate say? And then he just used to trace me. And then the Bully has got, if anyone's told you, he has got the strongest grip in the world.
Oh, I've been on the receiving end of it a few times.
He used to chase me and just grip me and do it all the time. And I just used to wind it up. It used to hurt, though.
Yeah.
So I used to get Tomo to, what's your mate saying? I can't understand it.
Because they are, yeah.
They're thick as thieves, then.
They are proper thick as thieves. Yeah. So... we're going to come on to your career at Wolves now, but just talking about some of the, like you said, some of the managers, Colin Lee, and there was John Ward you worked
John
under
Ward
as well.
There, yeah, John was there. Obviously, it soured a little bit and Colin stayed, which was a little bit, it was kind of strange. Now you're looking at hindsight, like talking about it, it's strange because they'd gone sort of together, as it was a three really. There was Colin, Mark McGee and Mick Hickman.
Yep.
And they were the sort of three. They went from Reading to Leicester, Leicester to Wolves, and then Mark went. Well, obviously, we weren't doing fantastic. It wasn't brilliant. Mark went, Colin stayed. And then Colin obviously brought his number to him, which was John Ward. And then Colin went, John stayed. So it was a little bit... That sort of period was a little bit of a strange one.
Yeah.
And I suppose some of the players are thinking, well, actually, he's just taken over. You know, you get a new broom sweeps clean, new manager comes in.
Yeah.
People's slates are wiped clean and everyone sort of, you get a bit of a lift. And I don't think it happened like that because some of the guys, as you know, Andy had a little bit of a problem with him. One or two others did.
I think, yeah, there was a few of the old guard, which maybe still had a good few years left in them. And I think when Mark come in, he had been given a little bit of money to spend, not in today's terms, but, and he did make some pretty quick changes and certain people didn't fit into his plans and he was quite single-minded and chose not
to. And I think that's where it sort of upset the apple cart a bit. And then John, everybody I've ever played under as managers or coaches, I've always respected them on it. You don't see eye to eye. John knows his football, good football guy, came in for a little bit and again, you fall out. You have fallouts, you drop out of the team, you feel you should be playing. Certain people have different ideas and that's just how it works. So I sort of went through all that area since Graham Taylor left all the way through till Dave Jones coming in is the year that I left.
Well, we're going to come on to Dave Jones. you've mentioned some of the players you played with. Actually, you mentioned a couple then. I didn't even... So you played with... So, of course, Gordon Cowans and Paul Birch were still there.
When I first got here, there was a multitude of players still here. Tony Daly, obviously, all of those guys. Froggy... Paul Birch, Gordon Cowans, John DeWolf, Mark Venus. There was a multitude of players that were when I got to the football club. And those guys were still sort of in and around it. Then Billy Samway signed the same sort of time as me. So it was a proper squad, good squad.
Oh, yeah. That was a strong... In fact, you know, under... Obviously, it was just before you, but under Taylor, I really thought we could have got to the Premier League. And then as soon as McGee took over and made some of the signings he did... You know, as a supporter growing up, I still had that belief we could do it because he was signing the likes of yourself. And there were some good players in the team. Why do you think... We'll come on to the playoff game against Palace shortly, but why do you think in your time there, didn't they quite do it, Simon?
$1 million question, isn't it? Someone just asked me a similar question. I've looked at it many, many times. It wasn't for work ethic. It wasn't for the players. There was just something just missing. We'd fail at a final hurdle. We'd get in and around it, and then we'd have a shocking week where we'd, you know, too many of us were off par on a day, and we'd get a draw at Grimsby or lose something there, and that the impetus that you had all of a sudden dropped us out of it. And I honestly don't know, because when you look at the team and the players, Mark Atkins, me, Bully, Don, you and Roberts at certain points, Robbie Keane, go through it. You know, you've got players there. The expectation, maybe some players at certain times couldn't handle. some of the pressure when it got down to it. Couldn't handle it, that's the wrong words. We didn't perform well enough and too many were off par.
Because it was never, at any point, it was never like relegation, flirt to relegation. It was always that nearly team. Mm. And that was the frustrating thing with the players individually and on paper that we had.
Yeah, I think it frustrated us as much. And it's like I said, when we sat down and you'd sit down and have a chat for about what we were doing and what. And like I said, it wasn't one specific you'd put on it and go, it was that, it was this, you know, we had a goal scorer, we could do this. When we played on certain days, we were unstoppable. And in other games, we'd be useless, basically. Or not useless, but we just couldn't get a result. You know, Grimsby away and we wouldn't score.
Yeah, and you couldn't grind out the results.
Not consistent enough in that little final spell. We'd be in and around it, 7th, 6th, obviously that season we're talking about, 7th in and around it. And that final push, we just never
In the dressing room looking round at some of the names and some of the players there thinking, do you know what? There's some serious players here.
Yeah, 100%.
There was former England internationals. There was players who'd played a long time in the Premier League. So it must have been a huge frustration.
Yeah, it was. Massive frustration. I think it frustrated the fans as much as it frustrated us, you know, because they're looking going, well, we should be. And maybe that's the operative word, and it should.
Yeah.
There's no divine right to anything. But it was just a strange time. And like I said, you just couldn't go that final bit. And as Dave Jones proved that little bit later on when he came in and changed it around a little bit, he got it to the promised land.
And speaking earlier, before the interview, you was actually quite honest in you actually believed to a certain degree you found your level, didn't you, in the Championship?
Yeah, just at that particular time in football, that may be different in sort of now. That sort of era, I'd gone to Reading, played really well, sort of, and your roles changed slightly in different teams and different people that you play alongside. Obviously, I was quite attacking minded. I'd like to try and, you know, find a pass effectively. So I would take a risk. I would give the ball away more than other people. But
you're looking for the killer pass.
Yeah, sometimes, yeah. I'll try and take on that killer pass. And, you know, if you speak to Bully, the amount of goals I set him up, frightening. Yeah. But I would give it away. I would hit the last defender and it wouldn't quite get there. But I was prepared to take that risk and not shy away from it.
Yeah.
So I would do that. And sometimes when it's not going as well in a game, I'm not going to change. I'm not going to go hiding. So I'm not going to not get on the ball. So sometimes, and like I said, Marmite, lots of players say it when it, some Wolves fans will love you, some people will hate you. That's just an opinion on football. And at that time, it's just something I did, and I just would do it and keep trying to do it. And the game started to change slightly. It went a little bit more, if you're thinking about the team of the Arsenals and that, it went a little bit more, not physical, but certainly there was a physical aspect of it, size, athleticism. I was never quick, so I never lost any pace.
At least you're honest, though.
I was never quick. I could run, you know, fit, run, but I was never quick. I used my technique and my brain to try and get me out of stuff.
Yeah.
And it started going a different way. And I dabbled in and out of the Premier League. Obviously, I played. I scored in the first ever Premier League, Dave. I told you that.
No.
Oh, right, okay. But I went, and it just at that time, it wasn't, the game had changed very slightly, and it wasn't quite for me. So at Championship, I was very, very comfortable at Championship level. That was where I sort of played the majority of my games.
Yeah.
I just felt that I didn't quite have that at that time, that little bit more to go up to the Premier League.
And you know what, Ozzy, that's honest. Because I think a lot of players, they can sometimes look at their career and think, do you know what, I wish that had happened. I should have done this, I should have done that. Yeah. But with you, you're quite philosophical in as much as you realised you played at a very, very, very good level, and really that you probably achieved as much as you could have done.
Yeah, listen, we can all go back, can't we, with certain things and maybe make a slight decision change or whatever, and that would maybe ought to pass slightly. But you know, I played an awful lot of games in the league and whatever else. So I felt that I did as much as I can. Yeah, I'd love to be wind back now and not have my knee injury and not have my Achilles injury and not have this and not have that and
not have to work.
I mean, I wouldn't be working now, you know, when I win the lottery. But that, all of those things are, they happen, they make you stronger. Yes, they're frustrating. Yeah, you wish you didn't have it.
Of course.
But it's part and parcel of what you deal with. What can you do? We're going to look back on, if I look back on my life like you do, Jase, you know, you've had some hardship in your times. If I look back on my life and worried about all those negatives, we'd never sleep, mate. We'd never sleep. We'd never be able to go to the next day. And it's hard, I get that, and I get mental health and I get all of that stuff.
Yes.
But you have to, some point, put it to bed.
I
love the game. I love what I played there. I love the game now. But certain bits, if I hadn't have got that knee injury, I might have got in the Premiership. Sometimes.
Yeah. I would. You can't look at it like
that.
No,
I played in it maybe 70 times, but I played at it.
Yeah.
I didn't play in it and think that I'm a Premiership footballer, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
You played in it. But did I take control of games? Did I? No, not really.
That
I did score in the first ever Premier League game when Shearer
got 2.
You
didn't mention that. Who was that for?
I was at Palace. I was only a kid, and I come on a. It was the first, like I said, it all changed around, and it was 92. I think it was.
Oh, yeah, because it was the first Premier League season, 92-93?
Yeah, 92. First ever Premier League season. So I was in Palace, in and around the first team squad.
How old was you at the time?
20.
20?
Yeah, 20. Just turned 20. And then I was on the bench for that game, Blackburn. Shearer had signed for Blackburn. Shearer got two. I came on a sub late on and we were 3-2 down. I got the equaliser in the last minute. Header.
A header?
Big man.
Yeah. So you're 5'8", aren't you? 5'8" of football heaven.
Yeah, not on Wikipedia, but I changed that.
Okay. Oh, you changed that.
Yeah. I go for 5'11". I get more modelling jobs.
You keep saying Wikipedia updated by Simon Osborne. You're getting taller and taller. So... You played with some great players at Wolves. I did make a list of some of the icons, really. Now, you actually played in Steve Ball's last game where he scored at home to Bury.
Yeah.
I mean, what was Steve like to play with? Because I remember him from, you know, mainly from the times before you got to the club when he was scoring 50-odd goals a season. What was he like to play with in terms of, you know, his...
He was just a phenomenon. Honestly, I've never seen anyone with a natural... instinct to score goals. You know, he didn't like the technique or training sort of side of it. He liked the game. That was his big. He trained, I'm not saying he wasn't a bad trainer, but he wouldn't want to practice finishing. He was just such a natural goal scorer. And for me, he made great runs for me. He made, you know.
So he made your job easy, really?
Yeah.
Easier.
A midfield player lives and dies by a centre forward. I can't play a pass if he don't make a run.
Yes.
And similar, if I don't get the ball from a centre forward, I don't get a chance to shoot or I don't get a chance to do stuff. So for him, you know, he was always looking to get in behind. He was always looking to make runs. And, you know, that's the thing. I'd take risks. But when I take a risk and we'd get a 2-1 win at Birmingham because I've stuck bullying from 60 yards and he's stuck it in the corner, everyone thinks you're a genius.
Yeah.
But when I've done that and it's gone into the centre-half chest, they think you're useless. So it is what it is. But that's what I'm saying. But he was. He lived for goals.
And the good thing is with Steve, I suppose, if you put a ball to him and even if it's 10 yards either side of him and you haven't quite got the touch you wanted to, you know he'll fight for that ball and he can turn that then into a goal.
Oh, 100%. I mean, like I said, the times it bubble and he'd battle up with a centre-half and it'd bubble down and then he'd go smack and it's in the goal before you've even looked at your guy. Didn't even see him thinking about hitting that.
Yeah.
You know, ball to drop over his shoulder and he'd volley it in the top corner. And it's just instinct.
It doesn't matter how long you spend on a training field, you cannot.
No, you can't replicate what he did. You know, it'd just be in the right place so often. You do not score the amount of goals that man scored. Don't care what any level you play.
Yeah, at any level.
That's a professional footballer in 510 games or whatever it was.
Yeah, 561.
Something like that.
306 goals.
It's crazy.
And that is never going to be...
Oh, that's just... you know, you look at... Everyone talks about Shearer. Shearer's ratio in the Premier League is phenomenal for somebody who got injured.
Yeah.
And when you look at Bully at the time, you know, you don't play for England while playing in the second division.
No.
That's like...
And that's not going to happen anymore.
No, never in a million years.
And another striker you played with, Robbie Keane.
Yeah, not as much, more towards the end of it. Robbie made his debut and I was in a hospital bed.
Great.
Yeah, another great story.
Story of your life, isn't it? Yeah,
Robbie, you could see the moment he came in out of the youth team in and around the first team, good player. What a top.
And could you see that in training?
Straight away. He could beat people with ease. Just had something about him. He had a little bit of arrogance about him, which was good.
Yeah.
But mate, he just had something about him. You could just tell. You know, you wouldn't want to go against him in a 1v1 defending draw saying he could, you know, hurt people.
And could you see then the player he was turning into and the career he was going to have could you see he was going to play 100 times for Ireland?
No, you didn't, but you saw the potential. And you saw that he had something special, but he had to then transfer that and become the player that he did.
Yeah.
That you know, he had that talent. There's lots and lots of players that have had that, but he turned that into something different. And he had something special. He was a top player. And obviously going on, you see what he did and his career is frightening.
Phenomenal. And a couple of players who played just behind you at the back. Dean Richards.
Yes, God rest his soul.
What a player.
Great player, Dino. Most laid-back guy in the world.
Really?
Yeah, just Dean, bowling, a bit late, whatever. Just turn up, stick his boots on, go out, sort of have a warm-up, play like he's playing with his mates in the park.
Oh, he was majestic,
just
wasn't
a Rolls
he?
Royce.
He
was, yeah, just a
Rolls Royce, that's
yeah,
the
he
word.
Was, and then he had, unfortunately, the car accident.
And I think that
didn't help him.
Yeah.
But he still played to a top level. Went to Tottenham. Went to Southampton. Yeah. So yeah, good player. Dino. Good. Yeah.
John DeWolf.
Big John. Great guy.
I bet.
Yeah, bit of a character, John.
I bet you remember him more off the pitch than on the pitch, don't you?
Yeah, I didn't play loads with him. He played a little bit towards that season. He was sort of a bit in and out. I think he was still struggling with his knee. I think he'd had a big cruciate injury. at some point, and he was struggling.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, yeah, under Graham Taylor.
Under Graham, yeah, because Jeff Thomas had the similar injury as well.
Yes.
So yeah, he was in and out, but yeah, good guy, John. Looked after us when we went to Iron Apple. Good lad.
You can divulge on Iron Apple, you know. You can. No, it's a family show.
Yeah, we went there for Darren Ferguson's stag do. That time, because Fergie was getting married. So John Kane, myself, a few of the other boys, we just went out there in the season. Well, that was my first season here. It wasn't a great season. We probably finished about 16th or something.
Yeah.
And then went out and Big John came with us. He decided to come out with us and was the father figure. We was all a little bit younger, getting us in nightclubs. He was brilliant.
That long flowing hair, the earrings.
Just walk up to the front. He's just brazen as hell. Walk up to the front. Oh, yeah, yeah, footballers win.
Just straight in, straight on
like
it.
Like walking past. I remember walking past Newcastle. They were queuing up and we just walked straight past them.
Really?
Yeah.
Brilliant. So did you, was it a good social life off the pitch? I don't mean on the piss, but did you connect well off the pitch?
Yeah, we did. Yeah, at that particular time, there was a lot of the guys that lived in and around here. And we was all of a similar sort of age. Myself, Neil Emblem, Dean Richards, Jermaine Wright, Fergie, so all those guys. We were a similar sort of age group. Steve Carica,
yes.
Muscat, Keeney was a little bit younger. Cole Robinson, a little bit younger. So there was a lot of guys that sort of lived locally. So yeah, we'd, you know, usual stuff. You'd go out, not every week, but you'd go out, you know, once a month on a Tuesday and have a few light hours and a bit of fun. Go down a
few light hours.
Had a mermaid for a couple, and then it was
getting Thursday. Chambers.
Chambers, wasn't it? Yeah. Back then. So no, you'd do that. Tuesday was a hard day, then you'd have the sort of afternoon off. Wednesday was a recovery day, and then you're back in training Thursday. So you sort of did it that way. And then the odd Saturday night, if you got a decent result, if you didn't, you'd try to hide, because Wolverhampton's such a small sort of city.
Yeah.
You'd always get seen anywhere, so you'd always get a fan. Oh, you were shit today or whatever.
Would people come up to you? And
yeah, you would get.
Because I think
bit.
That's very disrespectful and rude.
It is, personally.
I've never got that.
Yeah, but you're part of the product that they go and watch with the greatest respect. They're allowed to. They're entitled to their opinion. They pay good money to come and watch you.
Yeah.
And sometimes, like anybody, we don't always have the best days at work, and sometimes they're allowed their opinion, so long as it didn't get personal.
Yeah.
What happened today, when you get the one that's a little bit ignorant or rude and you were shit or whatever else, you sort of took a little bit of offence to that and go, you know, I'm just sitting here and have a bite to eat, mate. Go on.
Yeah.
You want to talk about the game, crack on, but, you know, don't get a little bit of that. Because it's so small, you get that. But that's just part and parcel of the world you live in, really. Social media is different now because it's all done.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's all done online now. Yeah. You're
don't
all right.
See anyone.
If you go out, that's the good thing now. If you go out, they won't say anything to you.
They'll send you a video.
Yeah, they'll just attack you online. You're probably going to have people, after they listen to the podcast, giving you loads about a game in 97 where you missed the chance or something.
Crack on. Crack on. They'll probably dig your dancing out, won't they, anyway, and your break dancing.
Actually, talking about your Twitter profile, that avatar when you're playing against Louis Figo, yeah. I mean, it looks like there you're showing him how to play football, has he?
I wish to God I was anywhere near Louis Figo. No, we played, it was like you said, it was the game, I think it was probably his testimonial, wasn't it? Was it the pre-season game?
Yeah.
At the Molyneux, and
I was going to say, Bully had about 7 testimonials. Yeah, so no,
Bully scored and I scored that day.
Okay.
Yeah.
Against Barcelona. Yeah, you kept that quiet.
Yeah, I see. I've got a few things. I've got to keep a few up my sleeve. No, we lost 3-2 to him. You had Figo was playing, Patrick Anderson, a few others, Lewis. God, there was loads. And then there was a little 16-year-old that come on for Barcelona.
Go on.
Xavi.
Really?
If you look back on that, yeah, Xavi played that game or came on that game back in then. And they were talking about this kid as being the next big thing. But they were a good team at the time. It was only 3-2 when we played against them, but it was brilliant. It was great.
And how good was... I mean, we can see the picture of you and Figo. How good was...
Oh, that he was immense. Like, that's the difference. There's a difference. You know, I found my level, Championship.
Yeah.
You then go to the next level, Premiership.
Yeah.
You then go to the next level, which is international, which is why Wolves are so fortunate right this moment in time that you have Yao Matinho, who's got 130 caps playing at your club, because every time you go up, there's another level. And this man's at another level. And
yes.
That's the difference. So you get to a Premiership player, and you get a lot of Premiership players, and you get people that think they're Premiership players and start talking about it.
Mm.
But then you get the next level up, and the next level up is an international. And that's the difference. You're now seeing at Wolves, 5 years ago, you wouldn't be seeing this kind of stuff here.
I mean, talk about Matinho. I don't normally like to speak about the players, the current team on the podcast. But with Matinho, he was actually a similar position to you, wasn't he?
Yeah, that's why you look at it and you look at the difference of it and what you've got. And that's what I'm saying, it's about levels, it's about understanding. But to get to that next level, that's just, you know, that's. I became a pro footballer, there's lots of elements that come into it. Bit of luck, right place at the right time, manager liking you.
Yeah. And you genuinely believe that?
100%. 100%. Yeah. I said to someone, I had a conversation with him not long ago and said, 5 years ago or 6 years ago, would I have made it as an apprentice to a pro? No, I probably wouldn't have done. The game's changed. It's from when I came in it, and then it got a bit more physical. Then it went very technical because the Barcelona team were very tick-attack. And then it's gone a little bit more again where they're looking for a bit more power and athleticism.
Yeah.
But then they'll gain. It sort of trends. It goes up and
it's
down.
It's almost in cycles, isn't
it?
Yeah,
and then now it's like technical players are the De Bruyne of this world and all that. And it changes. And you look at someone like that, and his era is in and around the era what we're talking about from Barcelona.
Yeah.
And that's why you look at it. And that's how you... all of it's luck. Lots of it's luck.
And that's once again, it's very honest to say, because I'm sure that, yeah, like you said, the manager likes you and this, but you know, that you do have to have the rub of the green on the way, don't you?
Oh, yeah, of course you do. You have a great game, score 2 goals or something, or whatever you do, or and that guy's watching that particular time. That might be your foot in, or you are an absolute shocker. And that might be your...
That might be your foot out the door. Yeah, I always say it's on the flip of a coin.
It is. It's completely. And like I said, there's lots of things. And then you've got that, then you've got a load of other elements that come into it. Dedication, this, that, all the other bits come into it.
Yeah.
Outside influences, problems at home. All of these things can affect young players.
But you say, actually, I was going to come on to your family, but now you mention it, sorry. How long have you been married, Ozzy? Because you've clearly got, you've been with the same woman, wife for years, haven't you? So does that help as a player, having that stability?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. Yeah, I've been married 22 years now, so I've been with her a bit longer than that. So when I first came up here, she then moved up here. Both my children were born in Wolverhampton.
Yeah, your son Teddy and your daughter?
Karis.
Yeah.
Yeah, so both born here, both born in Wordsley.
Brilliant.
Now gone. Both have Stourbridge on their birth certificates.
Oh, really?
Which is a bit of love for me. Yeah, my son still has an affinity for Wolves. Obviously, he grew up a lot around here.
Oh, fantastic.
So he still watches them. If the game's on, he still enjoys watching those guys there. So I think if he ever makes it as a Premier League ref, I don't think he'll be able to ref Wolves.
Oh, really?
You're not allowed to referee the team you support.
Well, I'm going to come on to that shortly, because your son's a referee now, so we'll come on to that. But you think, so off the pitch, it was important to have that stability?
Yeah, it was. It's just, it's like I said, it's back to normality, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
You always go in, you're kind of surrounded by a bit of a bubble playing football. You're kind of regimented. You're in at a certain time, you eat a certain thing, you do a certain thing, and it's all done like that. And then you come out of it, and it's not just when you come out of it when you retire, but when you come out of it and come home, you need a bit of normality. You need a bit of just downtime or whatever it is. And you know, you play a bad game, you come in and want to kick the dog and whatever else. And
that's why your dog's limping, isn't it?
Yeah, probably. I mean, but they have to understand it, and they leave you alone, or, you know, there's certain things. And it is difficult, and like I said, but fortunately, she managed to stick with me for somehow.
And a question I always love to ask is, did you see football as a job? Or, you know, some players do work as a job, or did you feel it a pleasure to...
No, it was a hobby. It was a hobby I got paid for.
Yeah.
Very fortunate. I love training. I love training every single day. Every time I go in, I'd have a laugh and a joke and train. And again, they're probably the most frustrating times as a footballer, is when you're not training, when you're injured, or when you can't do what you want
to
do.
Because it isn't about the money, is it? You know, you would give anything to, you know, to get back on that pitch.
100%.
If you say you're not getting paid this week, you can play instead. What are you going to do?
Yeah, play. Yeah. Play, 100% you play. That's the difference. And that's what I said. That's what, you know, little bits hampered me for certain periods of time. You know, we'll talk about that playoff final. But up till that, between March and the playoff final, I trained probably once a week, if I was lucky, purely because I had a knee problem that was playing me up, and it affects you. It affects your whole thing. You can't train, so that affects you. You're then going into games hurting, and it's all that side of it.
You don't have to name names, obviously, but did you ever play with players who was actually more interested in the money? You did.
Yeah, there was players. I'll name one for you if you want. Michael Oakes. Michael Oakes knew how many days were left till the end of the season. Fact, you can ask him. Michael Oakes, great goalkeeper, Oakes.
Unbelievable.
Great lad, training, no problem at all. Yeah. He knew how many days there was to the end of the season.
Really?
Yep, and how many games of golf he'd get in between now and then.
Really? So, yeah, he was...
He was a job to him.
Okay.
He was a job.
That
was a job. He was good at it.
Yeah.
He treated it as a job, no problem. Didn't cause problems. Come in, do his training, play on a Saturday, be good as gold.
But it was a job.
Yeah.
So he leaves the house in the morning, see you darling, going to work.
Comes into work, goes in, doesn't do extra, does his bit.
Clocks in, clocks out, see you later. Flipping heck.
Yeah, but like I said, I just treated it. It was great. It was, you know, I was getting paid for doing something that...
Yeah, I mean, look, most people...
Everyone else would love to change places, really.
Look, most people would give limbs.
Oh, 100%. 100%.
We'll touch... We'll go straight to it. The playoff semi-final, 96-97. Mm. Obviously, over two legs. we must have gone into that with absolute confidence in as much as, you know, the squad we had. It wasn't just about the money, but you could see the players they brought in. We faced your former club, Palace. I think where we got done really was the first leg.
Yeah.
We lost 3-1 away. Bully scored. I mean, talk us through the first leg.
We didn't play very well, if I'm honest with you, but we were still in it. Didn't play well. We were 2-1 down, and I think the third goal, we gave away a bit of a poor goal. Late on, I think they played a long ball in and we gave it away, and that was a bit of a... We'd come away from Palace 2-1. It's a difficult place to go to. It's a tight atmospheric ground. A bit like the Molyneux, but Molyneux's a little bit bigger. Palace is tight. Not an easy place to go and play. No.
But if
we'd have come away from there 2-1, I think we'd have been sort of happy that we could bring them back here, goal in it.
Nick a goal.
Under lights.
Got the away goal.
Under lights in the Molyneux. Probably the best atmosphere that I ever played in here.
Really?
Yeah, that semi-final atmosphere. Like I said, that as a game was probably one of the standout ones. We came into it. We played well. 2-1 up. Just couldn't get that third goal to take it. Because I think if we'd have took it into extra time, we'd have won the game.
Well, yeah. They'd have been on the ascendancy, wouldn't
they? Yeah, 100%. And like I said, we just couldn't get it and just fouled at that final hurdle. Which was frustrating, especially, like I said, for me, it was even, on a personal level, it was frustrating for me, because purely I'd, as I said to you just briefly there, I'd had a knee problem, which was playing me up, and because it was so, I just wanted to get, you know, wanted to keep playing.
Yeah.
So I was literally playing a game, coming in on Monday, taking the fluid out your knee, putting ice on it, taking your pills, getting through till Thursday, maybe have a little jog, train Friday, play Saturday, do the same sort of stuff, and then that happened. Obviously, we didn't get into the playoff, but that... obviously extended our time, because my plan was if we could get promoted, I could get my knee sorted out and be done.
Yeah.
Then obviously that didn't happen. Go and see the surgeons, whatever else, do this, do that. You then do all your pre-season. Then it came back the following season. Everyone's all right, yeah, start the running, do all the bits and pieces, start to get back into the football stuff. And then literally I left the training field in tears. My knee was shot. Just couldn't kick a ball. Literally sort of come off it. Gaffer, Barry Holmes at the time as a physio. I said, fellas, this is killing me. I was placing my knee. I said, I can't kick a ball properly. This is killing me. So I've done all the summer stuff.
Yeah.
You've gone from sort of May, all the way through, well, end of May, I should say. It's probably the second week when we lost in the playoffs. All the way through to July. I come back in pre-season, and it's just what, setback. And that's when I said to you about Keeney. I literally went to see about two or three surgeons, and then they sent me off up to Bradford and went, this is the last opportunity. Sort your knee out, unless you sort of...
See last chance alone.
Yeah. Basically took bone out my hip, put it in my knee. Done what they did, and I was sitting literally when Keeney played Norwich, scored two goals.
Oh yeah.
That was the day I had the operation.
Yeah. Oh, was that the day?
Yeah. Same day. Well, I think I might have had the up the day before, the Friday, and that was the Saturday, and I was still in the hospital watching him in Bradford, watching him scoring goals.
That after the second leg, we win 2-1. What was it like in the dressing room when you're so close to something and you know you got
just despondent, don't know what, you give a hell of a lot throughout a season, and to be so close and then to just sort of not blow it, but it just kind of goes out. It's shocking. I mean, like I said, I experienced it, we won't talk about it, 2 years before. I've got a great record in
there.
2 years before it, obviously we finished second, potentially could have got promoted and then lost in the playoff final. So that's just as bad, because the whole season you'd worked up to that. So it's 46 games. It's a long season. It's a long, long season.
I always think from a supporter's point of view, playoffs are a great way to get promoted. You get your day out at Wembley or Cardiff. it's basically a one-off match, and it is a brilliant way of going up. But on the flip side of it, semi-finals or the final is a disastrous way to lose, because you've worked hard all season, 40 odd games, more than that actually, probably 50 odd with all the cup games, and at the end of it, nothing to show for it.
No, it isn't, but you know that.
Yeah, you're going into it knowing that.
Yeah, but you know that when you start the season, don't you?
Of course you do.
It doesn't make it any easier.
No.
It certainly hurts for a couple more weeks, mate, I can tell you that, for definite. And that weren't just my knee that was hurting, it was for a couple of weeks after that, you just kind of lost a little bit, if you know what I mean. You need to sort of refocus yourself, and like I said, it's difficult.
And when you're with the surgeon and he's basically saying, look, last chance alone now, if this works, it works, if this doesn't work, it's the end. I mean, that is literally like the bubble about to burst, isn't it then?
Yeah, like I said, it got to a point, it's like I said, you play all the way through, and then I'd been given a specific programme, and then I stuck to it rigidly all through the summer.
Yeah.
You come back in July, I had a straight line running. We got out the running. I don't think we'd done baggage that year. I wouldn't have done it with my knee.
Oh, God.
And it was like, you go back into pre-season, you start running thinking, it feels all right. You know, I've done all the rehab, I've been in, and
yeah,
it starts going. And then the intensity starts going up. So the first week's quite a lot of running. And then the ball work starts coming in. And then it literally got to a point, and it was just, it was no, like nothing. It was going back to what I had the year before. And you're like literally looking at it, so you're getting injected with stuff, so they're looking at your bones and this and that. And then eventually they sort of look at it and go, look, this is what we think we can do.
Yes.
If it works, it works. If it doesn't, you probably don't, you won't be able to put up with a rigmarole of professional football, basically.
Yeah.
Touch wood, it worked.
Brilliant.
Obviously, I had to manage it. Don't get me wrong, I had weights and this and that.
I
managed to snap me Achilles and that after that, but that's
a great story.
Yeah, but you just have to manage it. And, you know, touch wood now, you know, I can still run around, I can still play.
Yeah, we can see, yeah.
Yeah, which is great, and I'll keep doing that as long as I can. Yeah, you have days, of course you do, everything. Everybody's got a little aching pain.
You're only 47, aren't you, Simon?
Yeah, I am, yeah.
And
yeah.
A young man still, so
yeah,
we've got to...
Yeah,
so we don't really want to go on to the old stars.
I've got to catch up with a man, haven't I?
So, one game in your career, in your Wolves career, which obviously a lot of people will remember. You wasn't playing that day, and I didn't realise, I didn't know whether you'd been dropped because you seemed to drop Thanks. Everyone else who had a good game.
Yeah.
You were suspended for that game.
Yes.
Was the infamous Mark McGee, the tactical genius he was at that point, the semi-final, the FA Cup semi-final at Villa Park versus Arsenal. I mean, he changed the team. I mean, Steve Claridge played centre-forward. He'd just come out of nowhere. He hadn't even played a cup game in that competition. Hans Sagers in goal. He'd gone with Paul Simpson, Carl Robinson, Robbie Slater, come on a sub. He dropped Bully. He dropped Robbie Keane. And you were suspended. I mean...
I think Neil Everton was injured as well, wasn't he? I think Neil was
injured. I mean, the question really is, do you think Mark McGee picked the wrong team? I mean, FA Cup semi-final once again.
Yeah, in hindsight, you're looking at it and you're just thinking, I mean, started with Stevie and Don up front. Don played really well,
yeah,
to be fair, in the quarters at Leeds.
Yeah.
Like I said, I was suspended, which wasn't great.
At least you didn't get dropped.
No, I was suspended. I got sent off. I didn't actually realise at the time, but when he named the team, sort of weird, it raised a few eyebrows. Put it that way, in between the players when we looked at that. And like I said, I didn't realise at the time we were playing Ipswich away, getting absolutely battered, and I managed to, unfortunately, with my lack of pace, boot Bobby Petter twice and get sent off, which wasn't very clever. Anyway, come in the dressing room after, and I've sort of, as the boys come in, sorry fellas, getting sent off, frustration, whatever. So like, they're sort of Aussie, don't matter. And then McGee comes in, starts throwing a few expletives around about people, and he doesn't even know he's suspended for the semi-finals of the FA Cup. And I thought, great, I didn't know, I had no idea. So he's thrown that one at me. So I get suspended, got sent off, and he fined me. I can't believe it. Gutted.
Oh,
it's a triple whammy.
I mean,
no, I know.
Ozzy, would you have knowing if he was going to get sent off and you missed the semi final, would you have still gone for that tackle?
Yeah, it wouldn't have changed.
It wouldn't have changed anyway. You're still professional.
I wouldn't have thought about it. It was just at the time, and we talk about certain things, and I'm trying to get a reaction. Obviously, I was captain at certain times and whatever else, and you're trying to get a reaction. So I thought, well, if I boot somebody,
yeah,
might get a bit of a reaction out of our lot. We might, you know,
there's
certain things in certain games, and you try and change things around by having a chat and, you know, let's stick a few long balls in or whatever it is, and you sort of decide that on the pitch. And I thought, well, you know what? I'll try and take the ball by the horns and boot somebody, maybe rile up their crowd a little bit.
Yes.
That maybe it'll get us up a little bit.
Yeah.
Didn't quite work that way.
And I think with that particular semi-final, we only lost 1-0 anyway. And Christopher Ray scored.
Yeah.
I think it was
his
only
goal.
It was
a poor game, wasn't it?
It was, and I just tend to think they was there for the taking.
100%.
And with the team that we had, to drop Bully at that particular time for Steve Claridge, I don't know Steve Claridge, but I think it was sacrilege in an FA Cup semi-final.
Yeah.
If there's one bloke that's going to be up for that more than anyone.
Bully. Yeah, I think, like I said, I think that, again, that's why probably Bully will have his penance with Mark McGee and stuff like that, because that's, you know, that's a game that he would have thrived on.
Towards the end of his career as well.
Towards the end of his career, you know, he would have thrived on that. And there was, you know, I'm not going to lie about it, there was a few raised eyebrows, mate, when the team was named, and Keeney obviously wasn't starting, Stevie Claridge was brought in. You could sort of see Robbie, he was coming up and a younger player.
Yeah.
And you could see him being maybe brought on as an impact player, but Bully out, Stevie in. Couple of other little minor tweaks. Yes, I was suspended. Yes, there was a couple, but there was certainly a few eyebrows.
It was a very strange team.
And it was a poor game where you're saying, like I said, it wasn't Arsenal's finest. And if we'd have been anywhere near like we were against Leeds, we would have had a chance of beating them.
And once again, Mickey Stoll had played in all the former rounds in goal. And then I think Hans Sagi is coming against Leeds in the quarter final.
He did, yeah.
I'm not sure why.
I think Stoudy was injured that game.
Right. And then he stuck with him then for the semi.
Yeah. I think Stoudy was injured for the Leeds game.
Right.
And then he brought obviously Hans in and then kept Hans in for the semi.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that's how it was then.
The end of your Wolves career. So, I mean, you was there for 6 years, Ozzy.
Yeah.
You know, it's a long time. It was sort of your final manager was Dave Jones, and you played a couple of games under him. What was your relationship like with Dave, and how did you come to sort of leave the club?
I played at Wickham. I broke my toe. I think in one of the first games I played for him in the FA Cup, I think I broke my toe at Wickham. I didn't realise at the time. I obviously done something and came off and couldn't get it right and basically broke my toe. And we didn't see eye to eye.
Mm.
Just didn't. He didn't particularly fancy me for whatever reasons. And talked to a few people. He had preconceived ideas about what he thought I was. Because not
really.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, probably because, like I said, I'm not prepared to. I'm prepared to say stuff if I'm not happy with stuff, or I'm prepared to stick up for players. One of the reasons you get to be a captain at certain points, or be able to speak, and I could speak, and I wouldn't be bullied by people. I'd been brought up around.
Yeah.
Ian Wright, Mark Bright, some people like that. So, you know,
some big names and big voices.
So, certain little things. My contract was coming to an end.
Yeah.
At the end of the season, in all fairness, looking back at it now, he made the right choice. My time probably was coming to an end. We hadn't achieved what we should have done in that 5-year period.
Yeah.
Just sometimes the way it was sort of first dealt with. So we had a couple of to dos. Just the way I thought he was talking to some injured players and whatever. So I stuck up for them, and we sort of had a little bit of a to do, and then it came that I kind of saw that I wasn't going to play anymore. Somebody asked me if I would go to Tranmere, or wanted to take me to Tranmere. So basically, a bit of backwards and forwards at the club, and I left on deadline day to Tranmere. So I signed for Tranmere.
Yeah, and they were in the Championship.
They were in the Championship. They were bottom at the Championship, trying to stay up. Kevin Sheedy was manager at the time, so sort of did that. Went up to Tranmere and played the last 10 games of the season, which was good for me. Sort of tried to get myself back in the shop window because I want to earn a contract somewhere and do all that stuff, obviously, because that's the other part of your career when you start getting toward the end, contracts and stuff like that. You're looking over your shoulder.
Yes, of course.
He did that, to be fair. Then I went up to Tranmere. Cut a long story short, I had a nightmare with an agent who basically messed me about no end. Didn't do what he was supposed to do. Left me in a lurch. I ended up going on trial to places. I went up and played in Scotland. I went to Huddersfield.
I mean, honestly, can I just say, Ozzy, at that point in your career, you're a proven Championship player. Clubs don't need to, let's have a look at Ozzy. They might need to assess your fitness, but
yeah, that's it.
You don't need to go to Scotland for a team to have a look at you, surely.
It's just how it was. Like I said, I'd been left so in the lurch, and it was getting so much later. You know, teams were starting back in July. This was coming into end of July, sort of start of August.
Yeah.
I mean, and to go back to Dave, in all fairness, I phoned the club, spoke to him, just sort of, and the physio, Barry, said, look, can I come in, do a bit of training?
Keep fit. Yeah.
Bow, keep an eye on my knee, just let me do my stuff and all that. And be fair, Dave Jones was good to gold. Let me come
in. Oh, okay.
Yeah, brilliant. No problems.
I thought he was going to say
no,
yeah.
No.
I thought, thanks.
It was done. No, it was good as gold. Oh, that's good. Absolutely good as gold. No problem at all. Like I said, I've got respect for every single manager. He made a decision, and basically his decision proved right.
Yeah.
He changed it. Give it a new broom, swept clean, brought a few older boys in, changed it around a little bit, got promoted.
And
so he's right.
He did get promoted very quickly, actually. It was a couple of seasons
after that.
Through the playoffs.
Yeah, but it's proven right, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think when any new manager comes in, Ozzy, they know who they're going to sign. You know, if he's coming to Wolves, he knows who he's going to get rid of. He knows who he's going to sign. He's already earmarking his midfielders and his strikers. And sometimes, like you said, your face fits or it doesn't.
Yeah, no, I didn't. Like I said, I didn't have any issues with it. I just, like I said, towards the end of it, we had some bits and pieces. And then I just, to be fair, in the end, it got sorted with the club. All I said is, it's just a little bit of loyalty. I've given you 6 years.
Yes.
There's a little bit of give and take. And that was all it was. Went off, come back, had no problems at all with it. And like I said, the club have been brilliant every time I've ever come back. No issues. And that's just, like I said, respect for Dave Jones, no problem at all.
And to be fair, Wolves is the club that you spent most of your career
at. Yeah, absolutely. Like I said, it's done. He's done. I'm not going to harp back on it. Of course, I was gutted at the time. I didn't want to leave.
Yeah.
Your club captain, you don't want to leave and all of this stuff. But I went to Tranmere and then it didn't stay there. But every time I come back to Wolves, like I said, they were great. He let me back in. Barry treated me at the time, and not treated me, but just made sure it was all cool.
And then it was Port Vale, Gillingham and Walsall?
Yeah, Port Vale, strange one. A bit of a story to that one. I basically didn't have a club, so I was... I coach now with Bobby Bowery, Valenti Academy. I only do one night and we coach and do bits and pieces just to keep me handing with him. Good friend of mine from Palace and his mate who I've known for years. They're both agents. And literally I was punting out to people I knew. I was phoning, trying to get a game, just to play.
And how old was you at that point?
30, I think I was at the time. 2000. I
mean, why no one?
Just like I said to you, once an agent had messed me up and then obviously words out, I can't get anything. So I was going to play for Tony Parks at Halifax, just going up to go and play. He said, come and play.
So just because you want to play football. You're not at Halifax with the money, are you?
No. He just said, look, come and play football. Right, so I was driving up the M6, literally in my car. My mate, Mike, who's Bobby's partner in the agency, phones me up and says, Ozzy, where are you? I said, I'm going to so-and-so. Right, okay. Fancy going to Port Vale.
Come up nearer.
I'm at Knutsford now. I've stopped.
Knutsford, perfect. 20 minutes away.
Yeah, so I've gone, what is it then? He went, well, I've just been on the phone to Brian Orton. Blah, 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 blah. I've thrown your name in. Fancy going in there. I went, oh, yeah, why not? So round the corner. He said, look, just go down there. They've got training. First team main in. Go and see him. I went, all right, no problem. So car around. Phone Tony Parks. I said, look, Tony, don't mean to be horrible. Just going to go into Port Vale. If it doesn't work. So it was fine. It was good.
Yeah.
I said, look, it's on the doorstep. I'm going to give it a go.
To be fair, Halifax, you're still 3 hours away in Knutsford, aren't you?
Yeah, so I did that. So I turned back round. Obviously, go and see Brian when you get there. Tell him I've sent you in. So I've gone in. The old knock on the gaffer's door, walked in. Said, right, Brian. He went, yeah, sit down. So I'm like, yeah. So his first words to me were, what's your story? And I went, don't know, give us a clue. What's my story? He went, well, why aren't you playing football? Why haven't you got a football club? I went, I'm not going to bore you with it now, because obviously you're training in a minute. I'll go and train, and if you feel that I can offer you something, we'll talk afterwards. If not, no issue, mate, but I don't have a story. Honestly, I don't have a story.
Yeah. And I'll get straight back on the M6 and get to Alley Crackers.
I literally, he said, oh, okay, fine. So show me the dressing room. Obviously, the reserves were sort of training, and just went out, trained, training finished, sort of got there, and he's sort of there, and he went, come and see me in my office in a minute. I went, all right, no problem. He said, get changed, come and see me. Right, no problem. So anyway, just done that, went in, got changed. You know, I'm an older pro now. I'm not a kid.
30, to be fair, you're still a young man, but in football terms.
You're an older player, you know. So I've gone back in anyway. So I sat back down, he went, well, come on in, are you going to tell me your story? What is it? And I went, I'm telling you now, I'm not a bad egg, I'm not this, I'm not that, I'm not lame, I'm whatever you think I am, I'm not. I said, I've got messed up by an agent, I don't have a football club. I said, I just want to play football.
Yeah.
So he went, okay. He said, what do you want? I went, just whatever. You just tell me. You do what you got to do. So he went, right, give me a minute. So he just went upstairs. Come back down. He went, right. He said, I'll give you a month right now on that money. Not massive money at all.
Yeah.
He went, I'll give you a month on that money. We'll see how it goes from there. I went, perfect. He went, and by the way, you're not going to train. You're not going to go and play in that reserve game tomorrow. You're not going there. He said, you're playing Saturday.
Really? First team? Literally, bang, straight back
playing
in?
Saturday, yeah. Straight back. And he was brilliant. Brian Orton, brilliant. Good as gold.
Yeah.
Just literally went out, played. Played the 6 games, and then one of the clubs that were meant to be interested in me in the summer, Andy Hessenthal at Gillingham, where I knew, then signed me. I went back to Brian. They was obviously first division, Gillingham were championship.
Yeah, so you're back in the championship when really, when you're on the way to Halifax...
Second division.
You're on the slope, aren't you, all of a sudden? Now back in the championship, Andy Hessenthaler
as well. That's it. So I went back to... He literally phoned me up. I spoke to Brian. I said, listen, I know you've offered me... This month was basically coming up. Jill's come back in, and so I said, look, they've offered me a deal. They're going to offer me two, like,
this year. It's on your doorstep, reality.
I'm here still. I'm living
in... Oh, sorry, because you're still living
in the Midlands, yeah. Basically said, look, they're going to offer me this year plus one more for definite with an option. I said, so, you know, and he went, listen, no problem at all.
That's security, isn't it? Yeah, at that stage of your career.
A little bit, yeah. So I just said to him, look, I appreciate everything you've done. I know you're not going to be able to match it. I'm going back in the championship, but like, I'd just like to thank you, and that was it.
Brilliant.
And then
and it's nice to finish it on good terms.
Literally done that, signed there. Obviously, my family stayed here. This was probably, so that would have been probably at beginning of October. I think I played the whole of September at Port Vale. That was the first club I had that season. So I went all August without a club and then played there September and then went to Gillingham. So then went down, stayed with my mum and travelled to Gillingham.
Yeah.
While the family was still here. So
my wife
looked after both the kids up here.
Wow.
And then I was travelling back after the game on Saturday. To here and then back down again, sort of, I believe, early Monday morning.
I mean, is that hard? Well, the reason I said, you know, because obviously Kent's local to where you live now.
Yeah.
is that hard then coming back from Gillingham and still living in Wolverhampton? And at that point, you know, Wolves are still a huge club and you've obviously been part of all that. Is that a little bit hard when you've...
I don't think it is in the football terms. I think it's just hard in your general sort of... I'm travelling 170 miles twice, like every 4 days, if you know what I mean. So it becomes a little bit, and then you've got the wife and all the bits that go with it and younger children. So that all adds into it.
Yeah.
So that went up to, I think my wife moved back down sort of the Christmas time. So I went October, November, and then she came down once I found a house and that.
But then, to rent. Then you got to move back to the Midlands.
Yeah, then I do 2 years. Then I do 2 years down there. In that time, I managed to snap my Achilles, get fit again, come back in, have a fallout with the chairman, and then move back to Walsall.
So where was you living when you was at Walsall?
Not far from where I live now.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you were still travelling all the way back up for that?
First off,
yeah.
Just for the pre-season part of it, while I literally came up, because it all happened quite late. I'd agreed basically to stay at Gillingham in principle. Didn't, cut a long story short, wasn't the contract that I'd agreed with.
Yeah.
We had a fallout, me and the chairman. I then phoned, Colin Lee came up to, Colin Lee was then Walsall manager. Phoned me, said, I see you haven't signed. Would you be interested in coming to Walsall? I'm putting together this little project, blah, 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 blah. Obviously, I'd worked with Colin.
Yeah.
Went through the whole chat of what it was. He didn't tell me everything he was trying to do, and I sort of said, "Yeah, I'm up for a bit of that." So,
and was at that point, was there a couple of other former Wolves players there at the time?
Darren Baisley had been there.
Yeah.
Neil Emblem was there.
Yeah.
Steve Carica then came.
Vinnie Samways did a bit as well.
Vinnie literally came. So when he sort of went through what he was doing, and then his last little bit was he said, "I'm going to sign Merce," and I went, "Really?"
Yeah.
Because he just obviously got caught at Portsmouth. And I went, oh, right, okay. He said, yeah, that's my thing.
And he was flying at Portsmouth, Paul Merson.
Flying. He was flying when he first got to us at Walsall.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, this is all right. So literally, I signed that. Again, that was another two-year deal with a year option. So that's kind of taking me through. And at that point, I was thinking, right, with Colin, obviously he knows me, I'm now thinking about me finishing.
Yeah.
Good coach, Colin. Really good coach. So I'm thinking, right, I can try and start progressing my coaching career.
Yes.
So that was my thought in it. My thought process was that. So we then, again, up sticks, back up here, moved back up, rented places up here.
So where was you living then? I bet your missus was slipping.
I lived in Tetnall, Woodthorn Road, then I moved to Codsall, then I moved out to the A5 in Vetsy Bank out that way.
You see, I think football, yes, 6 years at a club, and obviously Wolves, you know, there, you can see the glamorous side of it. Sure you was on. I don't want to talk about money because the only players ask about money really are the ones that played in the 80s. But what my point is, I can see the glamorous side, decent contracts, decent money, etc. But then all of a sudden, you're saying now towards the end of your career, you're 33, 34 year old man. You're still a young bloke. Next thing you know, you are literally then up in your family again. Are the kids having to change schools at that point as
well? Yeah, my daughter had 7 houses before she was 6.
Yeah. See, it's not as glamorous as people think.
It isn't. No, I was fortunate because when I was here and I lived here a little bit, I came back to put them back in the schools.
Yeah.
So my lad was at Birchfield, my daughter was at St Dominic's.
Yes.
So then they started there. I went back to London, kept in touch with the guys there. Obviously, they had bits of coaching for them at Birchfield.
Yeah.
When I came back up, I put them back in. So it wasn't.
So it worked out.
It wasn't as hard a transition for me to then go up to say Manchester or somebody else.
Of course.
I already know the area. Or I know what I'm doing. So it's a little bit easier. It's still a drag because I've gone back home. A lot of my wife's family are very close. They're all back home. My family are sort of spread out all over the place, but that's sort of more your base. So then it's a little bit difficult. So then you come back up here again and it
must put a certain strain on the family when you are at this stage of your career moving up and moving down. It is difficult, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And that's what I said. I did that. And then when it got to the end of it, obviously I was at Walsall, assisted Merce, done coaching, assisted Merce. I applied for the job, didn't quite get it. Richard Money came in at the time. Then once I've applied, you know you're sort of going to go. I left, was trying to find a club, training at Stafford, doing bits and pieces. I went to Hereford.
Yeah.
Graham Turner.
Yeah. Oh,
Graham was down there. Yeah, Graham was down there. So the old Wolves connection again. Yeah. I don't think it was through that I went there.
Yeah.
I knew the physio that was there that used to be at Gillingham. He sort of spoke to me and said, "What are you doing?" I said, "Well, nothing really at the moment."
Because Hereford's a great club.
Yeah, lovely little club. And I was, again, living here. I could travel it 45 minutes to an hour. Not the end of the world. Bit of a travel, but it's fine. Went down there, sort of started training down there, and then signed a month deal there. And then literally, I was about to sign, and then my wife unfortunately lost her sister's son. was autistic and unfortunately lost him and her nan, and she was like, I've had enough, I want to go home.
Yeah.
So you went 6 months at Hereford. Not about money, it's just six months at Hereford. So I just went, right, that's it then. I was selling my house in London, so I pulled the plug on that. This was literally, probably, schools would start in September. I probably left within 2 weeks, I was moved and back down in London.
So then you move, obviously, back to the family home then. Back to my home. And then that's there, when you could resort, you know, resume normal life, if you like.
Just moved back to there, managed to get the kids in school.
Yeah.
And two schools down there, because the family had been at that school, private school, but managed to get them in because we had previous family in there.
Yes.
Did that, and then just moved back to there, mate. Moved back to there, tried to punt around to see if anything was happening. A lot of clubs are set at that sort of time, and then just went, well, actually, this is not, I don't think I'm going to get back in now. I was 30, coming up to 35. And sort of went, right, so I just went and played at Bromley, played non-league.
And, I mean, you touched upon being assistant to Paul Merson at Walsall. Yeah. I mean, what was the nights out like? with Paul Merson, the nights in.
Yeah, when he first came to the club, he was amazing. He was fit, healthy, in a good place. I mean, we all know there's lots documented about at the moment and the dark side of lots of people.
Yes.
But he was flying. He scored the best two goals in the debut. We beat West Brom on the first day of the season. And he was, and honestly, but in training, if he has his moments, you know.
Yeah.
He's 35, I think he was at the time, maybe older, but he was phenomenal.
Yeah.
An absolute genius of a player. And he came in and was really, really good. And then the demon set in.
Yeah.
I think on Boxing Day, we beat someone on Boxing Day. It might be Cardiff away or something like that. We were sixth in Walsall. We were sixth.
Wow. I mean, in the Championship. They're seriously punching above their weight at that point, aren't they? But, you know, realistically.
Yeah, we are, but you've got Paul Merson, George Leitao up front. There's myself, Vinny Samway, Steve Carica. Paul Reid.
There's a lot of experience there, isn't there? Serious experience.
Paul Reid, Dan Paisley playing right back. You know,
that's a good side.
We're not a bad side.
That's probably one of Walsall's best ever sides.
Yeah, good side. And we're flying. And then, again, the dynamics.
Yeah.
Mick Housel at the time. I think Mick worked for Walsall.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, Mick Housel was sort of assisting with Colin, but didn't like it. Didn't like the first. Mick was more an academy type guy, but brilliant. Great guy. Yeah. And then he stepped down. And then the dynamic. Colin Lee brought Paul Bracewell in.
Right. And then he just changed.
Yeah, upset the wrong people. Merce had his little wobble and went off. Vinny Samways was travelling from Marbella. That's a great story. He used to travel and play.
So, flying from Malaga.
So, we'd fly from Malaga.
Yeah.
If we had a, if we didn't have a midweek game, he'd come in on the Tuesday.
Yeah.
Train through to the game on the Saturday and go back.
So he'd literally fly in, play the game, fly out.
No, fly in to train. Typically, either Tuesday or Wednesday. If we had Tuesday off, he'd come in Wednesday, train Wednesday, Thursday, Friday.
Yeah.
Play Saturday, fly back Saturday night.
Weekend in Marbella.
And then come
back. And then back or come.
And then come back, yeah.
Brilliant.
And then it sort of upset the apple cart. You had him and Paul Bracewell, didn't see eye to eye. And then we got relegated.
Oh. So after such a good start as well.
Went from six to get relegated, yeah. And then obviously Colin left.
Wheels are off the bus.
Yeah, man, Paul sort of took over caretaker to the end of the season. Then Paul took it. I came in as coach, but I couldn't combine both the roles at that time.
So yeah.
I went back to just playing. And then the following season, I came back in and helped him. So that was the third season there at Walsall.
And since football, Ozzy, because I know obviously you don't work in football now.
No.
What have you done sort of non-football related? What sort of jobs have you done?
Well, I went back down and obviously I played non-league, so you get a little bit of that. And then I basically was working with my brother and my brother to start with. He was an air conditioning engineer. So
right.
My dad's the spark. He's a spark AC, so I started in with those guys.
And what was you doing?
Similar stuff, cable runs, usual, just working, working with them, duct work, whatever it was we do. The old man was a specialist, so he'd wire, my brother would do a lot of the other testing, and I'd just be the dog's body that would run everything, basically. Done that for a little bit, then we got busy.
A bit like the midfield she was in over the years. The dog's body that done everything.
No, Dins, I thought Tony Dinning said that.
Oh, too. Yeah, flipping heck. We'll get Dins on soon.
Sort of done that, basically. Working through with that, and then I've got my brother-in-law runs a brick and block work company in the development side, and he sort of had something come up. So family's always difficult working with, it's a lot of pressure and intense, and I just left and come out of that, and basically so started in with him on smaller projects, and then sort of learned it, done bits and pieces, done MVQs and whatever else, so now I'm a fully qualified project manager effectively.
So is that what your day-to-day job is?
My day-to-day job is project manager. So I basically, at the moment I'm on site, so we've got a development of 14 flats and a commercial unit in Greenwich. So I run through everything day-to-day.
And this is the question that really morbidly obsesses me for some reason, I don't know why. what's the transition like, Simon, from, you know, you're playing at Walsall in front of 30,000 people, you're at Walsall in front of probably a good 6,000 or 7,000, then playing all over the country in the Championship at some big clubs. And literally a few months, years later, after you've dropped out of the leagues, etc., you know, you are working on a building site, which there's nothing wrong with, by the way. But the transition, did you find it difficult? Did you find it, you know, did you struggle in any way?
It's difficult when you first come out of it, because it's so regimented. It's not regimented, you just have a routine.
Yeah.
So when you first come out of it, it's difficult. You know, you've got time on your hands, you don't know what to do. It's very easy to, sort of dwell on it. I suppose I'm a little bit lucky in the respect that I don't dwell on a lot of stuff, and I'm not, you know, we were talking about somebody else earlier on, we won't name him, but yeah, it's not, my glass not half empty. I feel lucky that what I've got. So I just got on with it, just got on with it, started doing that, then doing a bit more. And then eventually, like I said, the football, you never stop thinking about the football.
Yeah.
You never don't miss it.
Yeah.
But it's just another part of your life that you've moved on from. Do you know what I mean? So
yes,
you're now working. I enjoy working. I'm good with people. I'm okay with stuff like that. So I don't mind it. It's not the same football. Of course it's not.
Yeah.
It's something that, you know, I do. I enjoy doing it. If someone offered me a job, probably back. Would I take it? I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Purely because I just don't think my era and the way I do things would work in today's stuff. Just how it is.
And that's honest as well. And,
yeah,
and
I just don't think it would.
The thing is, you've obviously got a great career now. You've got, you know, stability as much as you can in any job. And your issue is, you come back into football, you're starting in the lower leagues. Your first three games, you get spanked at Halifax, then you lose at home to whoever. Yeah. Next thing you know, you're sacked.
Right. Exactly.
And then
exactly.
What then?
Yeah, exactly. It's difficult, isn't it?
Yeah.
Much as we'd all love to go back in it, it's you're then going back into the game that we love for 20 years, which is risk or reward. It could be over in a heartbeat. That's the thing you've got to remember.
Yeah, but the dream is, before you take a management job, you get them promoted, then you get them promoted the next year, and then a big club comes in for you. And then,
yeah, listen, everybody would love that, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
You know, if Paul Merson, you know, he fully admit it, he found it really difficult to manage, because he couldn't see why people couldn't do the stuff that he could do.
Yeah.
He found it really difficult to manage players that weren't anywhere near as gifted as he was. That's, I think,
with
why
his
I got
ability.
Him.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think he found that really difficult, and he'd admit that, and that's why he found it difficult. But say he come in and took to it like a duck to water,
yeah,
I'd have gone off with him somewhere else.
Yeah.
And that's what happens. It's just, again, that's part of that we talk about a lot in football, about luck, right place, right time.
Yes.
Right break. Getting a job, you get a job, you do 4 or 5 decent results as a caretaker, all of a sudden everyone's like, "Whoa, he's top notch." And that's how that's how football is. I suppose that's not just football, that's life.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? That's life.
But it's magnified in football because everyone gets to hear about it.
Yeah, of course it is, but that's life, isn't it? If you work hard, typically if you work hard you get the rewards.
Yeah.
And that's in most jobs. You know, I'm hopefully instilled that in my children, that you work hard and you get lucky.
That's the one I was going to touch upon. Obviously, we did earlier. So Teddy, your son, is now a referee.
He is.
I did see something on Twitter the other week, Simon, which pissed me off a little bit, about he had a bit of a spat, didn't he, with someone?
No, not really. It was a coach of a team that said something, so he sin-binned him.
Right.
So he just yellow carded him straight away.
Yeah.
Because the coach had mouthed something towards him, which is thing. To be fair, the guy, in all fairness, a friend of mine went, "You do know his son, that is. Not that it makes any difference that he's my son."
Yeah.
And he sort of come back and apologised. He'd already apologised on Twitter, not because it was me, but apologised through me to my son.
Yes.
Which was good. It's difficult. I mean, I've gone and watched him, and he should be promoted February to level 5.
Yeah.
Which is great. He's enjoying it.
Is it hard for you to watch when, you know, you're looking at it from the other side now, so you're on the sidelines watching him. Yeah, you're on the dark side. Teddy's definitely on the dark side.
Star Wars theme this week.
You've spent 20 years screaming at referees all of a sudden.
I know. I don't find it difficult with the players. Sometimes I do when they do stupid stuff. I find it more difficult sometimes with coaches and certainly parents and coaches. The bit I find difficult with coaches is they're quick to try and deflect, jump on top of a referee who's making a decision, rather than first and foremost, they're about to sort your team out first. If the referee's having a shocker, sometimes they're going to have a shocker, but I've not seen him have a game where I think, if I think he's done something, I'll tell him.
Yeah.
If I felt he could have dealt with it differently, I'll tell him. Not that I know about referees.
Yes, but...
But I can understand...
From your point
from
of view,
From my point
of
view, I say, maybe you should have done that.
And he can learn a lot of you, you know.
Yeah, he knows football, trust me. He's very knowledgeable, he's a clever kid, he's obviously a Bachelor of Science in Geography, so he's not daft, but he understands football. He'll watch most random games you've ever seen, he'll analyse referees, he does also...
And is it his dream to referee as high as he can?
I think so at the moment. He's enjoying it. So yeah. Let it take him where he wants to take him. I won't, you know, I won't pressure him. He's part of Kent FA's core development, so they've seen a little something.
Brilliant.
So they mentor him. He goes for trainings. They have John Moss and people come down and do talks, and which is nice. They've literally like grabbed him from that. He's managed to nick a couple of cup finals and do that. But no, it's difficult. You know, and I've got a daughter who's doing musical theatre, which is almost like playing football. It's a completely, she's finishing her degree in that. And then she's trying to go out in a big wide world with a dancer or a singer or whatever.
So yeah, that's such a competitive industry again, isn't it?
Competitive industry, yeah. Very, very difficult. Injuries and luck and people liking you and liking you. Yeah. She's only short, not like me, obviously 5'11".
Football heaven. 5'11". You've grown 2 inches since you've been here.
I'm massive. It's these platforms.
He's actually 6'4". So, obviously, what we'll finish on is you are a regular in the midfield. Once again, it's a competitive midfield, the Wolves All-Stars. We've got players like Tony Dinning, Charlie Fignana, Mickey Holmes, all in the midfield. I mean,
Carl Henry,
oh God, yeah.
Kites is back.
Yes, yeah, Kites is back. So you've got to fight for your place now, yeah, Ozzy. You've got no given right to be in this. I'm joking. I mean, do you enjoy coming back up and playing?
I love it. I love playing. That's why I say, when I come up and play and run around, it's like, wait, I love playing football. I play, if I could play more, but my body won't allow it to play more. Yeah. I don't train enough. My knee's probably shot. But when you come up here, it's like I said, I come up to play the games, drive up and play the next day. I'm not going to come up and just walk around. It's pointless.
Yeah. I've tried to
turn off the competitive bit of it. I'll be honest with you. I try and turn it because I don't, I've done that bit. I want to come and play and enjoy
it. But you can see that you want to be there.
Yeah, of course it is. I want to play. I want to get on the ball. I want to enjoy it. I want people to play well. And I want to, you know, I want to try and score
a 30-yarder.
I'll make people smile. If I, you know, if it makes somebody smile, that these games that we do for charity, they're not for me. They're not for me to prove that I'm a good footballer or to prove that somebody else that we play against that we were good.
Yeah.
It's to raise a bit of money, to make a bit of smile on somebody's face, and also to have a bit of a laugh and play with players.
Yeah.
That not particularly, I haven't played with Carl. I didn't play with Carl. We was a different era. I didn't play with Jody, different era. But it's great to say Shay, same thing. I didn't play with those guys. Obviously, I played with Tony. And it's just good to get back out.
Yeah, Proudlock, Adam Proudlock.
Yeah, play with those guys. So it's good to just get out there and have a bit of fun and you know, run around for an hour and a half.
Brilliant. And the commitment you do to that, to be fair, Simon, you know, there is a few local players who obviously don't have far to travel. But for yourself, you know, you've had a week at work and you are giving up your time to come all the way to Wolverhampton, which is a good, you know, 4 or 5 hour round trip. So we appreciate that.
Mm. No, like I said, I love it. I enjoy it. And like I said, that's the good thing about it. It was great. Obviously, you managed to get a game on the Molyneux, which for me was brilliant. I was talking, you know, just to be able to go back and play.
Yeah.
Like, I've not been back on it for God knows how long. Since I got stuffed 5-0 by when I was at Gillingham, probably.
was that your last game, Molyneux? Was it?
No, I've probably played there for Walsall, but I remember getting stuffed 5-0 at Gillingham.
And it was obviously it's like a carpet now, isn't it?
Yeah.
When you had good pitches in your days.
The pitch was always a good pitch. Always a good pitch.
Yeah.
But just the stadium, the whole place has changed. It's completely, for the better. Someone asked me a question and they said, if in your time Wolves had gone up, what do you think would have happened? And I said, well, it was just yo-yoed for me. Didn't have the infrastructure in place. Didn't have the training ground. You know, I can talk about going back to training at Lucas Aerospace.
Yeah.
Cosford.
Yeah.
Driving, changing the ground and driving to these places and training and all that sort of stuff.
I mean, now they've got like a village.
Really? Yeah, you're like, really? And I was like, yeah, of course, yeah. You know, year before at Reading.
And even though, so they're training at Cosford and yet they've got an absolute state-of-the-art stadium, but it's still off the pitch. It maybe wasn't. You know, the facilities weren't where they needed to be.
No, that's right. And you just would have been personally up and down. But, you know, you look at it now, yes, there's been some horrible, tough times last sort of 5 years ago and whatever else we walked. But you look at what you've got
Look at what...
And it's great.
And
it's great.
And you keep in touch, obviously, with a few people from your time in Wolverhampton. One of your mates, Daryl.
Your
boot boy, wasn't he? I mean, you can mention Daryl.
Yeah, he's my boot boy.
What was he like at cleaning boots?
Useless.
Was he?
No, he was all right. To be fair to Fez, he was all right cleaning boots. He walked my dog quite well. Cut me grass. He was actually not bad at cutting grass. I taught him. So,
yeah.
He was my little... Yeah, no, just... He was cleaning my boots at the time. Great lad. And then when I set up a coaching company, sort of when I was here, over in Wombourne Way, where Daryl was from.
Yeah.
Basically, me and him used to do the coaching. go out and sort them out and holiday camps, and Dal still does bits and pieces with it now. When I left, when I left, I sort of said to Daz, you carry on doing it. But yeah, great lad. I've been, like I said, 25 plus years with him. Brilliant. And still the other week, when they get to the All-Stars, I still get him to clean my boots. He's still useless at it. The worst thing about Daryl was that he liked pigeons. That's the worst thing.
Really?
Oh, he's a pigeon fancier, wasn't he?
Because he was in the youth team, wasn't he?
He was. Fit boy, Daryl. A bit unlucky. Again, it's one of those...
He wasn't a centre midfielder, was he?
No, he's a centre forward, Daryl. Okay. Scored an awful lot of goals.
Yeah.
Quick. Very, very... Incredibly fit. And then again, knee. Done a knee here, then come back and done a knee again. And it's just it's just those things again. Done a marathon. He was flying until the last bit when he came down and I was watching him. And he was flying until the last. I think he was great time. And the last 6 miles properly blew up.
Yeah.
But he was a good, great guy.
But it's nice that you keep in touch with these players. Yeah, you know, people from your time. Yeah,
people like that. Obviously, if I see a lot of the guys there, Keith Andrews, Carl Robinson obviously went off. I still speak to Neil.
Yeah.
Darren Basie, they're both out in America doing their bits.
Actually, one I was going to ask about was he was at Molyneux actually on Saturday doing a bit of corporate stuff. Kevin Muscat.
Yeah.
I mean, as a hard player, I mean, what was he like to have on your team?
Oh, he was good. He was good. Muzzy was very, very competitive, but a good footballer as well.
Yeah.
He'd do some stupid things sometimes. You know, you'd put him after, let's get the crowd quiet, let's do this, do that, and then he'd stamp on someone's foot and you're like, mate, we said we'd keep the crowd quiet. Yeah, I couldn't help it, you know. And when John Ward was there, he'd never play me and Muzzy on the same team because we'd just moan at Wardy, so he'd put us on opposite teams and hope me and Muzzy would moan at each other.
Got you.
But he was great, like I said, good footballer. The guy that kind of gets a little bit overshadowed because he had a few incidents.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? But he was a top footballer. Good player. Yeah, he was an international, he was a good footballer, and that kind of got overshadowed a bit. But a good guy, good captain. Put his art, wore his art on his sleeve. Always played well, but that the one or two instances, Bellamy being one.
Yes.
But actually, people quite enjoyed that from their own team. But that's just what it is. But a few incidents happened. But no, he was a good guy, man. Good footballer.
And finally, Ozzy, great career. Like I said, nearly 200 games for the Wolves, 6 years. Have you got any regrets from your career?
No.
Well, that's that. Ozzy, you've been an absolute... I think you haven't.
No. Listen, I've got no regrets. We could all look back and maybe think that you could do it in anything, not just football. Like, maybe if I'd done that a little bit, maybe if I hadn't gone to QPR, they all lifts and butts. But you can't change them. That's hindsight. It's a wonderful thing, but none for me.
Ozzy, thank you for your time. We've really enjoyed you on the Wolf Whistle. Once again, look forward to seeing you for the All-Stars. Cheers, mate.
Cheers, pal.
Cheers.
Top man. Done.